It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Yesterday, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that a state college grant program for minority students is unconstitutional.
Created in 1985 by the state legislature, the Minority Undergraduate Retention Grant Program offers up to $2,500 in financial assistance to students who are Black, American Indian, Hispanic, or from some parts of Southeast Asia. In the 2023-24 school year, that program provided $440,000 for 770 students awarded based on financial need.
But in a unanimous ruling, the court found the program violates the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law regardless of race or ethnicity. The decision aligns with a 2023 ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court that limited race-based college admissions.
For a look at the legal and constitutional side of that ruling, we're joined now by Howard Schwaber, Emeritus Professor of Political Science and affiliate faculty member at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Howard, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We see a big split sometimes in our state Supreme Court. Not this time, a unanimous decision here. Why didn't we see any dissent? Why did all the justices line up and agree with the initial plaintiffs?
Well, the agreement is a little bit more surface than it appears. The short answer is that the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in SFFA, the Harvard and University of North Carolina affirmative action case, really left them no room for maneuver. Under the logic of that case, there was a 100% chance that this challenge was going to succeed. But it is worth noting that Jill Karofsky wrote a lengthy and impassioned concurring opinion in which she expressed her deep, I can't state this strongly enough, her angry disagreement with what the U.S. Supreme Court did in that case, her embrace of the dissents by Sotomayor and Jackson at the U.S. Supreme Court, and her clear statement that she wishes it would be possible to rule otherwise. Given, however, what the state of the Supreme Court precedent is, the state court had no choice. And of course, Annette Ziegler, who wrote the opinion on behalf of the court, is an enthusiastic supporter of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling.
What was that U.S. Supreme Court ruling? What was in there that so severely limited the state Supreme Court's ability to act, even though parts of the court, as you say, did not like that ruling?
So we have to back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a gigantic historical shift that takes place roughly around 2000. Historically, before that, the Equal Protection Clause was understood to protect minorities against actions by the majority. The phrase was discrete and insular minority, and it went back to James Madison's fear of majoritarian tyranny. Starting in the 1990s or around 2000, there was kind of a conservative constitutional revolution, a pushback in that area that said, no, the question is not whether the group being affected is a minority or the majority. The point is that certain kinds of classifications are unacceptable and the Constitution should be colorblind. Now, what that means in practice is that anytime there was a racial classification, strict scrutiny would be triggered. That is, the law would be struck down unless the government could meet a very high standard of showing a compelling interest and that there was no other way to achieve their goals. In SFFA, the U.S. Supreme Court for the first time said that affirmative action programs in college admissions could not meet that standard pretty much ever. And so in this case, the funding program had to be evaluated, under that same strict scrutiny standard. And that's what happened. And Ziegler found that Wisconsin could not show a sufficiently compelling interest given the ruling of SFFA and that the means it had chosen were too racially discriminatory. All of that is just the application of this technical legal standard that applies in what you might think of as the most disfavored possible category of government actions. And there's a reason that there's a saying that strict scrutiny is strict in theory and fatal in fact.
And one argument from universities in the past has been, hey, as a university, part of our mission is bringing a diverse group of people. That is our compelling reason to, say, do admissions with some kind of racial preference or scoring or these retention grants. That idea that this is a compelling interest seems to be rejected under that U.S. Supreme Court ruling.
That's exactly right. And to be slightly more precise, what the Supreme Court said is this might be a compelling interest, but it's too amorphous, too hard to define, and above all, too difficult for judges to measure for us to allow it to be used as a standard. And so Justice Ziegler just quoted that language about amorphousness, that the idea of diversity is too amorphous to be measurable by courts, and said that cannot qualify as a compelling state interest. The most interesting part of the oral argument was when the state of Wisconsin tried to argue that there's a different compelling interest, which is retention. Mm-hmm. That is, they argued that there's a crisis of retention among these minority students, partly due to financial concerns, that these grants would help solve that problem. The lawyer for Wisconsin conceded that no court had ever accepted that theory before. And rather unsurprisingly, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, in Justice Ziegler's words, declined to be the first.
And in one of the concurrences here, somebody went into that argument a little bit, and I got the impression they were saying that might be a compelling interest, but you haven't given us the data. You haven't given us the statistics that say these groups, these minority groups, are not being retained at an appropriate rate.
Well, that was the other problem, the other big problem with Wisconsin's case. So the law was passed, as you noted in the introduction, in 1985. And the particular grant program we're talking about is one that provides money to attend private colleges, technical colleges, and others. The problem, according to the court, was that when the law was adopted in 1985, the data the legislature relied upon to justify the grant program was data from the Wisconsin public universities. That is, there was data showing problems of retention among minority students in public universities, and this was taken to be an indication of discrimination and a problem that needed solving. But as Ziegler pointed out, that data told the legislature nothing about the schools that were actually going to be benefiting from this grant program. Ziegler also ruled that you had to judge the adequacy of the policy justification for a law at the time it was adopted. So the mismatch in the data, the fact that the legislature has never produced specific data about this particular grant program, was another fatal flaw. That actually pointed to an interesting part of the outcome. The Court of Appeals had taken a very broad view and adopted the U.S. Supreme Court's general stance and declared all race-based educational programs in Wisconsin unconstitutional. The Supreme Court did not. Ziegler's opinion carefully focused only on this program, and that emphasis on the inadequacy of the data involved sort of points to why. It does leave open the possibility that some other program might survive the application of this strict scrutiny if the justifying data is better.
Howard, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Howard Schwaber with the UW Law School and Emeritus Professor of Political Science. Now we're joined by an education policy expert. Taylor Odle is Assistant Professor of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. Taylor, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What do you see as the impact of yesterday's ruling?
So I think as someone who studies the economics of education, two questions come to mind for me. Who was this program serving and what was the program meant to do? Right. At its core, this is a scholarship program meant to help increase affordability for students and families to access college in the state. So I kind of see this as the elimination of a scholarship program helping people do things. As Howard also said, this is a retention grant program. So serving students who are already in college to help get them across the finish line, where we know the data show that there are already these widespread disparities in retention rates across many dimensions, not just across race. And so as someone who cares about increasing opportunity to higher education, to career and technical training, I kind of see this as a double blow to Wisconsin. First, as a scholarship program, and second, as one focused on supporting students who face particularly high barriers already in college.
And the argument that students from these minority groups face higher barriers, that's something that doesn't seem to please the courts at this point. Is there a case for that, though, do you think?
I mean, the data are very clear that opportunity and success are not evenly distributed across groups, right? This applies to racially and ethnic and minoritized groups, but it also applies to other important populations. Veteran students and non-veterans don't persist and attain it the same way. Students who are from low-income backgrounds and high-income families don't do that. Students from rural areas and urban areas don't do it either. And so this program in 1985 was likely the state saying, hey, we see some differences in success rates across students in across the state. What can we do to invest to help equalize those things, right? And that could be for a variety of arguments. It could be for an efficiency argument of, if we already have people in college, if we put in some extra money to help them finish, as a taxpayer and a return on taxpayer dollars, that's going to be a huge ROI, right? So I think of it in that way. But again, going back, at the end of the day, this is a scholarship program. And Wisconsin remains one of the most unaffordable states in the country for students. And that's where I think we should put most of our attention here. This was certainly an important program. As you noted, it served about 770 students. We have over 200,000, enrolled across the state. And so a concern I have is that the average student or family family might see this as a redirection of financial aid dollars from one group toward another, or that their aid is going to change. But that's really not going to happen at the end of the day. We have a bigger problem to deal with.
It is a big and complicated problem to deal with. Do you see a possibility of this kind of drop in the bucket in some ways at the state level, this grant program ending? Could it be redirected in a way that serves students at risk of not being retained, of leaving school because of financial difficulties, if it's not based on race?
Yeah, I hope that and much more, right? So to be perfectly clear, retention grants work, and financial aid is the most sure-fired way of increasing access and completion. The research is crystal clear on that point. I hope that this propels two things. One, I hope that grant program is certainly repurposed to support other students who are seeking to be retained and complete college. But more importantly, I hope that this kind of fringe case, if you will, shines a light and kind of reinvigorates our conversation around affordability in Wisconsin, right? I think we should be saying, okay, great, now folks are satisfied maybe that these dollars are being redirected. At the end of the day, it still doesn't solve the case that our state spends less than half what our peer states spend on financial aid per student.
And briefly, as we wrap up, this is one grant. Do you see universities, if they have a goal of a diverse student body, are there other tools in the toolkit now that admissions policy and now retention funds are set? They've said that's a no-go if it's based on race or minority status.
Yeah, so I mean, universities have a variety of priorities. One is increasing the racial diversity of their student body, but also socioeconomic and geographic, et cetera, et cetera. And so universities have always had a variety of tools at their disposal to increase those levels. As we now get further down this kind of litigation, some of those levers start disappearing, where we can perfectly target at a specific group based on an identity or something like that. But I will see universities as now taking this back as one additional limit or guardrail to keep in mind as they extend those efforts, whether it's targeted recruitment at some high schools, things like that.
Taylor, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
That's Taylor Odle, Assistant Professor of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. We also heard from Howard Schwaber, Emeritus Professor of Political Science and Affiliate Faculty Member at the UW Law School, looking at a state Supreme Court ruling against a state college grant program for retention of certain minority students.